Hello, you are listening to Unsung Stories, Women at Columbia's Computer Music Center, a podcast series and one part of a three-pronged event on the history of composers of marginalized identities, including women composers of color who have worked in electronic and computer music at the CMC and formerly the CPEMC, the Columbia Princeton Electronic Music Center. I am Kathy Cox, and today I'm in conversation with Yuriko Hase Kojima. Dr. Kojima is a composer and researcher of contemporary music whose work has been presented across Europe, the United States, and Japan. Since 2002, she has acted as founder and artistic director of the nonprofit art management organization Glowville, which works to promote contemporary music within Japan. On top of this, she is professor and chair of composition at Shobi University in Kawagoe City, with side teaching gigs at Toho Gakuin and Senzoku Gakuin Colleges of Music, both in Tokyo. Before all of this, however, she was a graduate student in composition at the Columbia University Department of Music, where she was among the last group of students to take classes at the Electronic Music Center and the first group of students to work at the newly minted Computer Music Center. Kojima-sensei, konnichiwa.
Konnichiwa.
Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to join with me here in Tokyo today.
Thank you for inviting me.
I'd like to begin by first having you share some of your reminiscences of working at the center in the mid to late 1990s. When you arrived at the center, it was still the Electronic Music Center. Then you witnessed the transition when it was renamed the Computer Music Center. Can you tell us something about your experiences studying at first the Electronic Music Center?
Yes, I started my graduate studies at Columbia University in 1994. And the first year I took the electronic music class taught by Arthur Krieger and assisted by Jeffrey Kitty. And we had seven, eight students to study in the class. And among them, I found another Japanese woman composer named Akemi Naito. And I met her for the first time in there. I was a little bit surprised that I found another Japanese woman composer there. And then the classes were taught every week, a couple of hours. And we had the first historical studies and listening sessions and discussing each other about the topics that we were taught that class. And after that, we had hands-on sessions to make cut and splicing tape works. So we studied how to use oscillators and how to use the patches. And we used the Buchla synthesizer too. So we needed to know how to patch, connect the patch cords from where to where. And then we did all that.
You mentioned Akemi Naito, and she was one of the composers along with yourself who was listed on this flyer you showed me of a tribute concert for Pearl Smiley from 1995.
Yes. Yes, so it was probably the last year for Pearl Smiley to assist the people in that EMC. And then we had the tribute concert at the end of the school year in probably May 1995. And we had the program for the tribute for Pearl Smiley for her long-term service to the EMC. And then we had some students to be included in the program. So I presented my first real electroacoustic piece made by using Buchla synthesizer and all other stuff, analog stuff, and called Impulse. That was my first experience to present my tape piece, real tape, because it was done on the open reel tape and then played back through that open reel tape at the Miller Theater.
Yes, you shared a recording
a digital transfer of Impulse with me. When I listened to it, I was struck by how much it had this retro 1960s, 70s kind of sound to it of analog electronic music of the time. With a total duration of about 7.5 minutes, so I can imagine that's a lot of tape splicing, many, many meters of tape. You mentioned that you created the sound materials for this piece using oscillators and also with the boucle. Did you also use, when you were organizing it, did you also use kind of 60s-style serialist techniques or calculations to organize and structure the piece?
Not really pitch-oriented. I was really focusing on the noisy kind of strange sounds that I never knew how to make. So it was a little bit different. So I didn't really think about those surrealistic techniques or whatsoever. Yes, just create any sounds on the machines and then pick up some of them that I liked and then put them together by cut-on splicing. And then I did many kinds of techniques, like really old tape techniques. After this first year at the center, working with all this analog equipment, how did you experience the transition to the Computer Music Center? I heard that over a very short period of time, like a weekend or something, most of the analog equipment was scrapped, basically, and replaced by computers. So how did you experience this change? Did you think, like, all this equipment that I've been using, spent so much time using this past year, like, it's all gone and I have to start over? It was the last year for EMC, but it was my first year for me to start all everything, right? So I didn't know what was going on to this in that center. And then I heard that those equipment will be would be gone like in a couple of weeks or so. And then I was like, oh my God. And I want some of them. I mean, to, you know, I want to have like a piece of blocks, like this cut and splice. So, it was a little bit a strange feeling. Yeah, but I didn't know what was going on.
So what classes did you take then your second year under the Computer Music Center?
I took the Brad's class and called Computer Music. And it was done, I think it was not at Prentice Hall, but in the Dutch Hall, I think. And then we met once a week. And then in the class, I found like 10, 15 people, all men, including Brad, and I was the only woman. Well, actually, we had another woman composer, Sofia Sergei, but she didn't really, I didn't see her so often in the Computer Music Center or EMC. So I was basically the only one who were trying to get used to the new system for my composing. So I was so lonely. And then I was I was the only beginner of this area of composition. So everybody was, they really seemed to understand everything from the beginning. And I didn't know anything. So the words like from the for programming language that Brad was writing on the whiteboard, I was like this. Okay, I know what's a while, but what is this for while? Oh, like that. So I was trying to write down on my notebook. Back then, I was not, well, people are not really using the personal computers or notebooks, and they are not so popular among students. So we are still writing on the notebooks. And then we go back to the studio later and then try it on by ourselves. I did, like going back to the studio during the night until midnight. And then, well, I ran into lots of problems that I didn't do. Well, I couldn't do anything because I made mistakes like not putting any little space between the the words or letters or whatever. And then I was so frustrated. And sometimes I cried in the studio because I was so frustrated. And then I didn't want to give up. So I asked one of the grad student friend, Doug Gears, to teach me, to become my tutor for teaching me the CMix. So that, because I just discovered that we were doing was CMix. So I write down everything on the notebook and then going back and then wait for Doug to arrive. And then we did sessions and the stuff. But still, I didn't have enough time to do something for a final project. So I had to think about the changing directions of my piece. So I decided to do some music concrete on the computer. That's what my first experience making music on the computer. So I brought back the DAT recorder.
Digital audio tape.
Digital audio, yes, to my place. And then recorded the sounds in the kitchen and in my place, everything. And then I made some instruments myself, like a small card box, putting in the little bell inside. And then like a throw them. And to make some noise and then record it, something like that. And then I collect everything on the SGI computer. So, and then I was working on the MIX software, MIX. And then I came up with the second piece of my electroacoustic piece called Reminiscence.
I can certainly understand how, after working in the very tactile world of analog synths and tape splicing, that it would be really difficult for you to kind of wrap your head around software, especially a software program like CMix, which is completely text-based using command lines and very abstract in a way. And I imagine also being a non-native English speaker that also puts you at a disadvantage for picking up the coding languages like CMIX, since it's so much rooted in the English language, like while GoTo and all that kind of thing. You mentioned Mixed. That was a software program for the SGIs. I know there were two versions of that. The earlier version was also a text command line version. The one that you used, was that the graphical interface? Okay, so that's more like we know today in Pro Tools.
That's right.
So that we'd have the graphical timeline and much more visual and looks a little bit more like tape splicing. So that would be easier for you, kind of. So it's understandable. That you would gravitate towards that.
That's right. And we had, I think, another software called Edit or something like that.
Yeah, maybe Sound Edit.
I don't remember exactly the name of the software, but we had another one for editing the sound.
Right.
And then we on Mix, we put those edited sound to put together as a piece of music. So I enjoyed that very much. I liked it a lot. One day, I put too many really tiny, tiny sound files at one time, like too many, like very short ones, like many, like hundreds of them or something like that. And then one day, the software didn't work. And then I couldn't put any one to add. And then I was like, oh my God, what's wrong with this? And then I asked Brad Garten, what's wrong with it? And then Brad was like so excited. Oh my God, Yuriko, you did something very unique, something like that. And then wait this for a second. And then he, emailed or something like that to the person who are creating that, they're developing that software. And then we discovered that I reached the maximum number of the sound files and that the software can handle. Brad was like, oh, Yuriko did it. Yuriko did it or something like that.
So, you push the limitations of the software.
Right. So
let's talk a little bit about reminiscence. That piece, the first piece that you wrote using Mix, and you said concrete. It's like a music concrete piece because you recorded sound around your house and invented musical instruments and so on and taped, recorded them on your DAT recorder. Listening to it, it's very different from Impulse. There's all these whispers, a lot of voices. Is that your voice?
No, of course not. It's actually Sophia's voice.
Oh, okay.
Yes, when I was creating something, she was looking at me and she was very interested. And I was looking for some text to include. And she recommended a poem by a Greek poet. And then she tried to read out loud for me, and so I recorded it and then cut and spliced it on the computer, and then I did make a piece of music that for the first time using a human voice.
Right.
Yes.
Thank you. So again, the structure of this is more through your listening and more intuitive kind of structure.
That's right. I intentionally did. Usually I don't really do when I compose. I really, I'm so well-toward structures and the stuff like forms and structures. So I think about everything at first and then decide the details. But in that piece, I try not to do that because of the it was a sound art. So I rely on my ability to listen to a sound, and then in my imagination toward what I listened, and then what comes next. I wait for that. Yes. And then sometimes we, when we listen to one sound, then we have a, how could I say, a kind of imagination and atmosphere out of the sound, right? And then I waited for that and then find another sound to add or connect. Yes.
Let's now talk a bit about your background. So I know you were born in Tokushima in southeastern Japan, and first you earned a bachelor's degree in piano performance from Osaka College of Music before moving to the U.S. to pursue graduate studies in composition. So maybe you can tell us something about your earliest encounters with music. Why did you decide to pursue studies in piano performance as a college student? Were you not interested in composing at the time? Did you have interest? Did it not develop until after you graduated from college?
I think it was very natural for me to compose music. So I didn't know it was called composing, but I was really doing naturally as a child. So I, well, right now, I think that I was composing a piece of music, like improvising, because I didn't know how to write down on the music paper. So just playing whatever I like and then keep doing that during my childhood. But and I always wanted to become a composer like Beethoven or Bach or something like that, because my parents are so musical people, not a musician, but very musical. So they bought me on like a series of classical music recordings, and I was really listening to them every weekend as a elementary kid. Strange elementary kid, I think, but I was really enjoying that. And then I wanted to become a composer, but I unfortunately, the area that I was living at that time was really far from the center of culture in Japan. So there was no composition teacher. So I decided to, but I wanted to learn music like formally. So I went to Osaka College of Music as a piano major. And then to Osaka, like not Tokyo. It was my parents want me to stay close to Tokushima. Yes. Yes. And then during that period, I also took had a chance to make a sound for by using a Roland modular synthesizer. It was, I think it was a System 100 or whatever, something like that. I don't really quite remember. But we did patch codes connections. It was a really small one. And then we created a musical art of, I think I chose Ravel's music or something to realize on using synthesizer for the first time.
So you were a teenager growing up in Japan in the 1970s. Mm. So were you, you talked about Ravel and the synthesizer, I think of Tomita.
Yeah.
So were you aware of Tomita and YMO? Were you a fan of this kind of music? Or?
Oh, yes. I was really a great, big fan of YMO and also Mr. Tomita. And but I didn't have a chance to, you know, get to know those equipments because, you know, there's not stores to sell those synthesizers and stuff. And then there was no internet shopping. So I copied in my ear and then played at the piano. And trying to become like a member of YMO. Yeah, something like that.
So you graduated from Osaka College of Music in 1985, but you didn't move to the United States until 1990.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you do in those 5 years in between?
I was a professional musician in Tokyo. We moved to Tokyo, and I say we because I was all the time with my husband, who was a jazz drummer at that time. And we lived for 5 years in Tokyo. And I was performing at live houses and restaurants and then teaching kids. And then, you know, in the course of preparation, I studied with Isao Matsushita for 1 year. Yes, so I composed 3-4 pieces, including piano sonata and a solo piece for koto, and and a string trio and something like that. String duo. Yes.
So that was in your last year in Tokyo before moving to the United States?
Yes. And then it was the first experience for me to take composition lessons.
Hmm.
Yes. Although it was privately.
Right.
Yeah.
And at Columbia, who would you say was your main mentor in composition?
In composition, I spent a longer time with Jonathan Kramer and Tristan Mireille.
So what influence did your studies at the Electronic Music Center and Computer Music Center have on your development as a composer, do you think? Are there any of your works that you can cite as personal breakthroughs in finding your own voice as a composer?
In my music?
Hmm.
Yes, I think that's my dissertation piece. It was the one peak of my development of my own voice as a composer. And I knew I reached it at that time. And then I wanted to do something new So I decided to combine live electronics in my large ensemble piece with the 15 instrumentalists. Yes, it was really hard because there were many things to do, to study. So, and then at that time I was studying with a composition with Tristan Murail. So he was the best person for me to work on with because of the instrumentation and stuff. So, and then through my studies at the CMC, oh, EMC, CMC, both, I discovered my own approach to the sound and how I should listen to music and how I can I could approach making music. Those are my final research as a composer, and then I wrote my dissertation essay about that. At which point music is born, something like that.
Yes. Yeah. In your dissertation, you wrote about your piece Chronosphere, your dissertation piece, that you wrote that the concepts of time and perspectives of sound were the main ideas that you had in composing the piece. Mm. And that the electronics play an important role in controlling the final acoustics in the performance that completes the piece. Mm. So I thought that was interesting that you say it's the performance that completes the piece. That's something that you talk about in your dissertation. And another point that you talk about throughout your dissertation and also in your description of Chronosphere is how linking with the electronics, that the electronics help you to realize what you imagine in your mind but cannot write on the music paper.
Yes, that's true. Yes, even not for the electronics, even for the real instrumental pieces, I have a lot in my head. And then I really have a difficulty how I could write it down on a music paper. I really have problems every time I compose because it's really there, vortex. But in that piece, I could express what I couldn't really write down on a music paper. So I really it helped me a lot, I think, especially for the places that maybe you could cite. Woodwinds are doing small phrases. They are playing like a high note with a really rapid figures, and then it was overlapping on top of each other again and again. It cannot really be obtained in the real instrumentation. So I really enjoyed it. Really opened up, widened my expression, I think.
And you mentioned that you use live electronics in this piece. That was using Maximus P?
That's right. But it was still very new to us. I mean, the whole world, to have those kind of ability to access to audio files live, real time. So it was so hard to make, because the MSP part was newly available at that time. So I wanted to use it. Yes. That was my first piece, I think, to use Max MSP. I was very lucky that I met those people who are very supportive, like Brad Garten, Jonathan Kramer, and other people who are supporting our studies at the CMC. And also, I was fortunate to meet those people like Marie Kimura, and then what she was doing, I met her in Thessaloniki in 1997, and I was the only, well, mostly the one of the only few women composers who were there. And also Mary was doing really fancy stuff, like with live electronics. Without Max MSP, it was a pre-Max MSP, I think, or maybe right after, around that time. So she was still bringing all those gears, like really big box of processors and digital processors and stuff, controlling by MIDI. So it was really very hard period for composers to do that. But looking at her doing that, like performing herself, the violin, and then handling everything at by herself, wow, it gave me really courage to move on to the next stage by myself. Although I haven't even tried my playing piano and handling my patches at the same time. It's really a big step for me. But looking at Mary, what Mary was doing in late 90s, it was really encouraging me.
Yes, because you mentioned meeting Akemi Naito at Columbia. And then later in Thessaloniki at the conference, meeting Mari Kimura, two other Japanese women composers. When you were living in Japan before you went to the States, were you aware of either of those two or other Japanese women composers?
Yes, I knew some of the women composers in Japan. Of course, the student of Isao Matsushita, he has many women composer students at the Tokyo University of Fine Arts and Music. But still, you know, we didn't really have female teachers to study with at that time. So we all, my mentors and our teachers are all men. One exception is Betsy Jolas, that I studied 1 month at the Fontainebleau school. It was really a fascinating experience for me to study for the first time with a woman composer. That was a special experience. But it was supported by another composer, Philippe Luhu. And then he was in charge of showing us the techniques and music techniques at IECAM and GRM in 1997. I think that was the same year that I went to Thessaloniki.
Right.
I went to Fontainebleau in July 1997, and then went to Thessaloniki in September 1997,
right,
or something like that. The same year, it was, those happened at the same time. So I had I saw those equipments at the IECAM and GRM for the first time in 1997. And Philippe showed us the possibilities, and both of them, Philippe and Betsy, two of them taught us like almost every day, like for a month. It was a short period of time in a month, but we have a really dense, really intense sessions. Yes, so it really gave me some kind of direction, like showed me some directions other than Columbia University education, I think. And also after going to Thessaloniki, I was told that my piece was the first piece to be included in the festival, which was finished by a woman composer herself.
So the first piece, yes, at the International Computer Music Conference.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if it was true or not, or official or something like that. But somebody told me that, and then I was like, "Oh well, I knew some of them. Well, but maybe they are not involved in ICMC."
Right.
Yes, and then also that my piece was a fixed piece,
right,
so using a computer, which it was. Not really at that time. SGIs are not so. It was so expensive,
right,
so it's not available for individual composers. So some people are using Next computer and SGIs, and those two are the main ones that composers are using for sound creation. But it was not really common at that time. So maybe that's why, yes.
So can you tell us about any projects that you are currently working on, or about any upcoming performances or other events that you are involved in that we should be aware of?
I am composing a string quartet right now, just finishing it at this moment. And then it will be performed in the United States in April by the Voyager Ensemble in a concert hosted by UMBC.
So that's the University of Maryland, Baltimore
County, I think.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yes. And then after that, I will have an orchestra piece to compose. It is a big orchestra instrumentation, like three flutes, three oboes and stuff. I never wrote that big instrumentation, so I'll be preparing for that. And then after that, I want to have create another electroacoustic pieces. Yes, starting hopefully from September or October. And also, I've been working on a research project on Asian composers and researchers who have been involved at the CPEMC, CMC. And I'm hoping to go visit the center and the library sometime this year. It's really good for me to study closely about the CEMC and the CMC to look into the details.
Well, Professor Dr. Kojima, it has been a pleasure speaking with you today. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you so much.
Unsung Stories, Women at Columbia's Computer Music Center is a three-pronged event, a podcast series, a symposium, and a concert that focuses on the history of composers of marginalized identities, including women composers of color, who have undertaken significant creative work in electronic and computer music. The project's objectives are to spotlight the little-known work of many of the women who studied and worked at the CMC since 1951, to explore collectively how institutional networks and intersections of race, ethnicity, gender, sexuality, and other identifications impacted and continue to impact the daily work and visibility of women composers, and to examine how systemic racism, as it intersects with gender and sexuality, can be combated in the field of electronic music, one that is still largely dominated by white men. For more information, please visit unsungstoriescmc.com. This podcast was produced by Zasha DeCastri, Eli Hisama, and Paolo Cosermelli Messina, with editing by David Adamczyk. Our theme song was composed by DMR. You can learn more about her music and work at dmr.land. This project is made possible by the generous support of a public outreach grant from the Center for Science and Society at Columbia University.